Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Pairing. Got it.
Got it.
And setting. Did it work?
Yeah. It's live.
Live. All right. So I'm going to keep it there. We are live, ladies and gentlemen. The Gracious
are live.
Back again in full force. We have a special guest coming on later. Chad will let us know a little bit about that later.
Mm-hmm.
But man, there's a lot going on in the world. How you doing, dude?
Doing well, thanks. Still in New York. I'm be going back to Cali on Friday, so next week will be from Cali.
And so you're getting to go from the cold-ish to some nice weather over in Cali, hopefully.
Yeah, it's been in the 70s there, so I mean, you know, kind of like it was here about 5 days ago.
Have you been getting all the rain that Jersey's been getting in New York?
We've been getting a little rain, yeah.
Yeah.
Not a lot, but yeah, a little bit.
Like a week ago, I've never seen, like, Brooklyn was flooded, parts of Manhattan. It was crazy.
I did see that, yes. They got some torrential downpours there.
I've never seen flooding like that in New York. Thought they had, like, aqueducts and stuff prepared for that. But, hey, when you get 9 inches in fucking, you know, a couple hours, I guess.
That will overwhelm any system.
Sure, sure. So what else is new? You've been paying attention to this lovely attack on Israel?
I've been paying attention to that. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing to see the different reactions, especially from the left, which just trips me out. It's like they now support terrorists in general. Not all of them, obviously, but like some of them, like they're having on the View, they're supporting Hamas and the Palestinians. I mean,
I don't
see the Israelis going around kidnapping babies and chopping their heads off. I just don't see that. And anyone from the View, if they will go visit Gaza, they will be fucking killed in an instant So it just baffles me that they want to take that side. It's just hilarious. But I guess that's what they do now. It's just opposite world.
I mean, it's just crazy for Israel to be sandwiched like right in the Middle East like that. And relatively, I mean, this is like the biggest thing that's happened to them since they've been there. And it's kind of wondering how it took this long for something to escalate like this.
Well, as I was saying earlier to you when we were talking pre-show, like the one thing that I'm really baffled by and seems really friggin' weird to me is that Mossad missed this. It's like, you know, they are the CIA of Israel.
Right.
It's their job to know this. And they missed this completely. They didn't have any idea it was going to happen. I mean, that's pretty wild to me.
Yeah, parts of me think like they let it happen so they could go and flatten Palestine, but I don't know shit.
It could be. That could be. It could be a larger conspiracy at play here.
Uh-oh.
Who knows? But the war hawks are out in D.C. for sure. I mean, Lindsey Graham's coming out saying we should go bomb all the Iranian refineries. I mean, let's open that hornet's nest, too. We got Ukraine. The world's kind of burning down, and let's just throw more wood on the fire, you know? Why not?
And isn't Iran technically nuclear, or do we not really know?
Technically not, but they're moving towards it.
Right, okay. Well, that's scary in its own right. I mean,
yes. And then Palestine, of course, a lot of those fighters were rocking U.S.-made weapons that came from Afghanistan that lovely Joe left there.
Come on now. How could that happen?
I don't know. It's just so weird. And then, yeah, of course, September 11th, $6 billion was released to the Iranians, but that wasn't used for this. Come on.
For hostage trade.
Used for humanitarian purposes. That's what Iran told those guys it was going to be for.
Right. Well, I mean, it's kind of funny that we didn't learn the first time we armed Afghanistan against Russia, and then they used their weapons against us then. Did they not learn from that first time?
Apparently not. The government doesn't learn those sorts of things.
Oh, my God. It's crazy. And now, again, we're arming Ukraine with everything under the sun. And then probably once this thing with Russia's over, just going to leave it there. And then some crazy people are going to pick up those weapons again.
What we seem to do. We did it with the Saddam Hussein, too. We armed him. And then, you know, it's what happens.
Crazy, man. Like, I mean, I don't pretend to know, like, I could run the world. But, like, some parts of me thinks, like, I could do a little bit better or something than just throwing weapons around and hoping they go into the right hands.
Yeah, you'd think so. You'd think you just, you know, look a few short years back and go, we did this then. Let's not do that again.
Yeah, we should learn from mistakes.
Leave Afghanistan and leave billions of dollars of equipment there.
Is that true?
Supposedly they what?
They like decommission, like whatever they left, tanks.
Well, that's what they said. Well, I don't know if they left tanks, but I don't know. I mean, that's what they say. This administration says a lot, but they lie through their teeth constantly. So, I mean, our president can't even tell the truth about teaching classes at Penn University, for fuck's sake.
Right. And so, he can't control his dogs, apparently. This is the second one thrown out of the White House, from what I've heard, for biting Secret Service agents.
Yeah, that's great, too. I read an article about saying that's the sign of a beta male, if you can't control a dog.
Of course. I mean, it's a big ass German Shepherd and it's little old Joe Biden who could barely walk. I mean, I would alpha that dude if I was the dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I'd be like, how about I just hit you with my tail and knock you over, you freaking Momo.
Momo.
Momo. It's a great
Momo,
word.
Momo.
Momo. Momo. But it's just weird, man. Like, I just don't get how we could have somebody who ran the country so well. Put Russia in their place. They weren't invading Crimea, Georgia, anything under somebody's rule. And then we get somebody in office and they have just the brazen balls to go in and take over Ukraine. But people would prefer that rather than somebody who speaks a little stupid and a little misogynistic. They would prefer to have an complete idiot in the office that doesn't do anything proper than somebody who speaks, you know, off the mouth, doesn't really think. Like, at least his policies were thought out and working great.
Yeah. We've traded bad tweets for the world burning.
Right.
Because President Biden can't even fucking speak. Right. So he can't speak at all. I can't put a sentence together, but that's better than bad tweets. You know, I mean, these people have mass psychosis. I mean, it's been propagated by the mainstream media, by the Russia hoax, by all this fucking bullshit, you know, the deep state, which, you know, some people say doesn't exist, which is just ridiculous to me.
Right.
It's the embedded bureaucracy and the, you know, military industrial complex of this country that runs the place, and they are all leaning Democrat for whatever reason. And they hated Trump. They hated him from the beginning because he was an outsider, and everyone that had Trump derangement syndrome was taught to hate them.
Right.
And, you know, great. So now you have the world burning down. And so we don't have bad tweets. It's so much better without bad tweets in the world. You have inflation through the roof, gas prices through the roof, the borders wide open. You have 4 million, you know, people that have come into this country. Most of them now you see are military age men. There's no women and children coming across the border, barely any that you see. Right. And some of these people are from the Middle East. So, I mean, what happened in Israel could definitely happen here. You have sleeper cells coming in.
For sure.
Yeah, here we go into conspiracy theory, but like just use common fucking sense.
Right.
You could easily have sleeper cells in each city, especially Dem cities where no one has guns.
Right.
And they could go on a fucking rampage and kill
sanctuary
hundreds of people. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, this definitely could happen here.
100%. And like you said, I mean, President Biden, when he got in office, said there will be no more wall built under his administration.
Well, yeah.
Because Trump was building the wall. Like, what the fuck, dude? Like, you are not securing our border, which is your number one fucking priority in my mind.
Well, now they've reversed that now. Now he says, well, the law says I have to build it. It's like, oh, my God, really?
Why didn't
pick a stance, dude. Just pick one way, please. Right. Stop being a flip flopper. Stop being a, controlled by whoever the fuck controls you, and just pick one thing.
Well, I think he realized, like, my God, that was the right move. And now they're coming over in troves and we have no way to stop it. So, I mean, I think he had to backpedal and say it was the law. Why wasn't it the law when you first got into office then?
Yeah, because he had to do everything opposite Trump. That's why.
Exactly. It's crazy, dude.
And they create this frigging border crisis and they're like, well, no, the border's fine. It's secure. Took Elon Musk going down there and broadcasting it to all his followers for people to finally go, oh, wait a minute. CNN didn't tell me this. It's like this. I don't see this on CNN.
Right.
Fucking retards in the world. It's just unbelievable.
So
sorry to use that word, but there's no other word to describe them at this point.
Yeah, slow adult doesn't quite say it as well as retard, in my mind. But to say that, I watch all CNN, NBC, and Fox News is really the only one that gives you the left and right side of things. Yes, they sway right, of course, but they still at least tell you the other side of things. So it's like if you're watching just the other news channels, you're only getting one side of things and you're not getting the full spectrum. And
you're getting full on propaganda at this point. You're not even getting real news.
And shame on people for being such sheep and just going through life being told what they should be told and paying attention to what they're being told to pay attention to. Like, do some of your own research, man. When the governor of Texas is saying this shit ain't working, like, thank God Texas is armed, because if it gets crazy, they could just start blowing people away when it comes down to it.
Well, then you have Mayor Adams from New York. He took a flight down, took a trip down to the border. And he's trying to blame Texas for it. It's like, don't blame your party's president in the office and his whole cabal of idiots.
Right.
Mayorkas. I mean, then they go in front of Congress and just blatantly lie. No, it's secure. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. I mean,
it's just baffling.
It's baffling is right. And it seems to be no end in sight. Like, if he was continuing the build of the wall since he got in office, we'd be a lot further along. If he didn't cut razor wire to just let people over, we'd be way better than we are now. Like, those little things, okay, maybe it doesn't keep everybody out, but it keeps most out.
It helps.
It helps. It
certainly helps. And it certainly helps to concentrate people into areas where, the Border Patrol can apprehend more people or whatever. But even once they get apprehended, they're just let go. It's just cash and release. They don't even deport anybody. It's like, oh, they're going to show up for court in 2 years. Yeah, right.
Right. I could almost guarantee that if you tried to cross China's border without going through customs, you're going to be shot right in the fucking head.
You can't even cross the Canadian border without friggin' getting, worked up.
Right.
Worked down by those people. It's like, we used to cross the border in a bus. We had to get off the bus at 4:30 a.m. and go through the bus with the dog. It's like, it's easier to walk across the U.S. border than it is to go into Canada.
It's insane.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Well, I have a friend who's Australian. She has a visa. And she has to go back on the 21st for, because her visa's over.
Right.
And she's trying to get, buy a business here and stuff. But anyway, so I'm just like, well, just fly down to Mexicali and just walk back across the border. You'll be fine.
Yeah,
fine. You get a free phone and probably a free bus ride back to Orange County, and you'll be taken care of. Stupid.
It's stupid, but it's keeping people like that out. Honest citizens from other countries that want to come over and do some good business in America, but it's letting all the douchebags come over who want to come over illegally and don't want to be documented and don't want to be part of our system that we've developed. The oldest democracy in the world. You're letting over criminals and like you said, it could be sleeper cells for all we know.
You have no idea who's coming over.
So I do have somebody entering the Zoom.
Brady Edgman, that's right.
You want to talk about this gentleman? Give a little intro.
Oh yeah. So my good friend Joe Chouteau, he was around in the early days when we were Public Affection.
Whoa.
And he has lots of good stories from those old days. And he was kind of our hype man. He would go on stage before we went on and like get the crowd hyped up because, you know, we were, no one knew who we were. There he is. There's Joe. Hello. What's up? Welcome.
Hello, sir. Pleasure to meet you.
It's good meeting you.
Welcome to the Gracious Two, man. So I hear you got a lot of history with Mr. Chad Gracie and even before Live Days, Public Affection Days.
Yeah. It started back in the Grand Falloon days during high school, I guess, or junior.
I forgot to mention that. Yeah, we worked with Joe and at this restaurant called Grand Falloons, you know, some of the guys in the band. So that's how we met him.
Oh, wow. So some of the guys in the band were. Is that how Ed Kowalczyk was so good at the server role in Fight Club? is he was from the Grand Falloon?
Well, all of us worked in the kitchen. None of us were servers. So, but no, I think Ed just, you know, he can be a good actor when he tries.
Sure. So, Joe, what's up, man? Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited, man. We've got a lot of good stories. I hope that everyone else out there will enjoy them as much as I will, probably telling them, and I'm sure it'll take that down memory lane a little bit, you know, just memory along with my own.
There we go. Here we go. So go ahead. What do you got? I'm anxious to hear.
Where do you want to start? Well, we can bounce around all over a bunch of timelines. I mean, did you ever tell them the story about the brick, the video camera?
Not on this show. No, I've told some people, but yeah, that was great. That was great. So we would rent a van in the early days and we'd drive to New York to go play CBGB's.
Nice.
And you know, that's where we got signed out of. And Joe was with us on this trip and we're going through, were we leaving or going into this? We were leaving the city, right?
I thought it was coming in, but
maybe going, yeah. We were leaving. I think we were going in. Maybe you're right. But we were coming into the city and we get to the end. We're going through the Holland Tunnel. We get to the end of the Holland Tunnel and there's this all these guys standing around. This guy comes up to the van. He's like, and he has this camcorder, brand new box, shrink wrapped. And he's like, you know, $200. And so we're all like, yeah. So we're getting our money together. And I think my cousin Matt, who was our roadie forever and still is working with the band, he put the most in. And we gave this guy $200. I think it was maybe $100 or $200, whatever it was. And we give it to the guy and we drive off and we're like, yeah, we got a camcorder, sweet. We're gonna record the show with that shit. And then we opened it up and it's a fucking brick.
Oh like, my god. And $100, $200 for a band starting off, that's a lot of loochie to just throw out there.
That's right. That was our Grand Falloon's money, man. Yeah. Our gas money home, too.
That guy was ahead of his time because I heard they're doing that with like iPads now. They're shrink wrapping them up and filling them up with paperweights or some shit and returning them.
It was always a scam.
Always.
You know, I was bumming because I didn't have enough money to barely get a hot dog in New York and had no money to pitch in. But I remember Matt G being like, I put the most in.
That's right.
I'll hold it. Like, it's mine. Yeah.
And then we were like, okay, it's yours.
Needless to say, that was the last time you guys bought something off the street or.
I think so.
Yeah.
I remember getting fake IDs in New York. We went to Times Square and got fake IDs.
Times Square. Yeah, that was a good one. We got hassled there. I don't know how much we want to talk on here, but I asking some guys to buy something on the corner and then getting hassled pretty bad down.
That's when Times Square was good, right?
Yeah.
Back in the 90s.
When 42nd Street was full of hookers.
That's right.
The good old days. Now it's full of crime and windows busting and stores being robbed, which is kind of.
Yeah.
Right.
And free hotel rooms for immigrants. Yeah, it's fun.
Yes. I feel like I should be an immigrant and just go get a free hotel room in this.
I saw a meme on Instagram. It was like a family dressed up as like with sombreros and shit on. Like, hey, go get a free hotel room in New York. Act like you're an immigrant family. It's like, oh,
that's
okay.
That's all you got to do. I have no ID. I'm from fucking Colombia. I'm a refugee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I heard tuberculosis is running rampant up there.
Oh, yeah. Now. I can believe that. Yes.
I heard
a lot of those people were supposed to be tested for TB, but they don't do shit. They don't test them for anything. They just let them in, send them out.
Well, yeah,
next
because
you know,
like, isn't the test like you get a click in the arm and then they got to check it like days later and probably days later, these guys are off doing whatever.
Oh, yeah. yeah, they're not sticking around for days. They're going to wherever, right. wherever, you know, Biden's sending them.
Or if they're being bused to sanctuary cities, which
right.
Once New York realized that that was happening, they're like, well, wait a second here. This is not cool.
I love it.
Cool for Texas, but not cool for New York.
Governor Hochul, like a year ago or whatever, she's like, oh, yeah, we're sanctuary city, sanctuary state. You know, all are welcome. Now she's yeah. like, no more.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. What else, Joe?
Well, I, the first time that we ever went up to Seabees was pretty good. I know a lot of that info is out of there, but I remember Ed and Taylor kind of getting in a squabble there in the alleyway before we even pulled out.
Okay. Before we left or before?
Yeah. Oh. Well, we were in the alley behind at the garage, you know, there.
You're oh, Newbury Street. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And I remember your brother, Scotty G, coming up and saying something to Ed, like Taylor said, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that's right. Whatever. Yes. Yes. That's when Ed was very, Ed was very sensitive to whatever then. So if you said whatever to him, he got fucking pissed.
And oh,
my
wow.
Brother, I think it was my brother. It was either my brother or Matt was like, great. Or Taylor just said whatever to you. And you, and then I got in a fight.
Ed was like, I'm not going.
Yeah. And that was the first time we went there. The first time we went there, we showed up and I'm assuming you were with us, but we showed up on a Sunday when they did New Band Day, but it was punk matinee. We didn't know that.
So
we pull up to the front of CBGB's and it is fucking covered with, you know, skinheads and like punk rock people and black leather and shit. And we're just pulling in from York, Pennsylvania going, we're going to get a fucking murdered tonight. If this is our audience, we better play everything fast. I got to play everything super fast, like punk rock. But then all those people like just disbanded. It was the matinee and we went on. And it was like three people in the place. We felt better because we knew we were going to get killed.
Yeah.
I remember Dave showing up and being like, it's all right. Just calm down, guys. And those guys yelling like, go the fuck back to Jersey. Like just yeah. yelling at us. We were like, yeah.
Then Dave Taylor's dad, he was with us. We had to bring an adult to rent the van, so we always had to have an adult with us to rent the van because we were too young.
Do you
remember I mooned that girl out the van when we were going there to meet Taylor's dad at that McDonald's and she chased us down the road?
That's right. Funny.
You want somebody from the band or was she just mad at y'all?
She didn't like getting mooned. And I didn't realize that we were pulling up right in there. You
know? That's right. You mooned her and then we pulled in there and she's chasing.
That's hysterical. Yeah, oh my God.
That was fucking great.
You look like you got a real white ass, if you don't mind me saying.
Oh, my Irish brother. Yeah.
White absolutely. Irish ass.
That came out like a full moon for sure.
Yeah. And then, the one time we were going up, we got caught in that traffic and we were weaving in and out of the cones and stole a cone and they pulled us into the called the cops on us. And I think Matty G ended up getting like $150 fine or something.
Yeah, Matt stole the cone. Matt cost himself a lot of money going to New York.
Yeah, apparently.
I remember we were leaving Seabees before you guys played and we were going down to Times Square. And I made a right turn going the right way on a one way and we got pulled over.
Oh, yes. Yep. Remember that, too. Yep.
Yeah. And Taylor, sitting in the back, you know, started popping. Can't you give us a freaking warning? And, you know, the traffic cop wasn't digging that at all.
Yeah. We almost got arrested then, too.
I mean, I guess a lot of these stories are probably really funny to us and maybe not so interesting.
Oh, no, they're definitely interesting to the rest of us for sure. I mean, I didn't hear a bunch of these. Yeah, isn't it weird, though, to go like they just expect you to know, like you can't make a right on red in New York coming from a state where you can? Or were you guys making a right down a wrong, like a wrong one way?
We're going the right way.
Yeah.
But just making a right on red. Yeah. I mean, how do they expect you to know all that without the sign being posted?
Yeah, I never paid that, by the way. So if anybody in New York's listening.
Nice. Perfect.
No, don't go to New York. You'll get a boot on your car. They don't.
That's right.
I can tell you for a lot of years, I drove a speed limit driving through New York.
Sure.
I think statues are up now.
Yeah. I think probably statute of limitations on that. You're good.
Yeah.
See, this is the stories I forget. This is why I had Joe on for these old things. I just, you know, shit you forget.
So Joe, would you actually go up before they performed and get the crowd like into it? And like, what does a hype man do?
Yeah, that's a good question. Typically you wing it. I don't know who, maybe it was Ed or somebody was like, yeah, just go out and announce us. And then it kind of maybe started there, you know, when, you know, I was fortunate enough to kind of see the whole thing go from like high school to full on, you know, rock
bands
playing, you know, stadiums. But typically, yeah, you just get up, just kind of, I don't even know, just kind of like, yo, what's, you know, just kind of
bring
MC.
Up the
like
energy, yeah. Bring up the energy. You guys ready to rock? We got this cool ass band coming up from York. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and then after the show, go out, kind of find the cute girls, you know, bring them backstage, kind of.
There was always that.
I wish I had that job.
That was good. It had its advantages.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's funny because, you know, you hear of live, you know, just kind of like what they're singing about and stuff. You think they're just kind of like no partying going on in the band. So it's cool to hear that there was some fun in the early days and you guys were macking it to the ladies and some debauchery was going on.
Yeah. And you know, the band kind of got on the right trajectory. I mean, I remember with the Chameleon, excuse me, in Lancaster, you know, being able to open up those guys, opening up for a lot of great bands, you know, the Pixies, you know, I don't even think I went out and watched them play when we were hanging out with the Pixies. I mean, Kim and Frank were pretty gnarly people to be around at that time, you know. Scenic River Days, music festivals. Chad, you remember we ended up on Dance Party?
We ended up on Dance Party? I don't remember that. What was that? Oh my god, see, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so
the band, you guys tell me shut up, whatever, but
keep going. It's great.
So the band was playing, you guys were playing Scenic River Days up there in Reading,
right?
Yeah,
okay.
And they had a big tent off to the side there and they were filming an episode of Dance Party.
No shit.
Like teen. Yeah. So
just I'm not going to give my age here, but I don't know if I know. Was this a show on TV?
Yeah, like back in, like obviously in the 90s. I mean, gosh, this was
early 90s,
89, 90, somewhere in there. And I just remember, I know Matt G was there. It was me. I thought all of us walked in. I remember Pat being there, I'm pretty sure. But so we end up in this crowd of, you know, in the tent, and the dancers are up on stage and, somebody was like, who wants to dance with Princess or something? We're all young. Next thing I know, they're grabbing me and pulling me up on stage dancing with
Go Joe.
Do you get to see yourself on TV? I totally forget.
But it's funny. Like a week or two later, sometime later, my sister calls me. She's like, were you on Dance Party?
That's great. Oh, my God. That's a good one.
Hell yeah.
The River Days, they were good. I mean, yes, it was just kind of neat to, like, I mean, there's a million stories. I used to have a video camera, so I was filming a lot of stuff too back in the day.
Nice.
Able to use some of that, you know, in the New Year's Eve show that they did a couple years ago. And Chad,
when we came back together, we used some of his footage in 2000, was it New Year's Eve 2016 when we, played for the first time here in York, and we used some of Joe's footage from that.
I was there, Valencia,
the Valencia. Yep, yeah. Yes, sir.
What was funny, I forgot I'd even had it, and then somehow I think during the construction of 210, we ran into each other because I hadn't seen you guys in a long time.
Yeah,
and then it popped. I remember reaching out to you. I was like, hey, man, I got all this footage, and I didn't know that you guys were already talking to Ed, like, you know, kind of behind the scenes.
We're keeping it on the DL at that point.
Yeah.
So he showed up. We burned a couple copies, and you have to show some of that to John. I don't know if you still. If not, I still have it somewhere.
Dude, that is like.
Gold. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have it, and Chad may have taken it when he moved out of here. So you know, he might be in his archives. I'm not sure. But
that needs to come out and see the light, man.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's some really early Chameleon clips.
Nice.
I think maybe even some Big City.
Right.
Hey, it happens.
Sorry about that.
The beauty of being live.
Yeah. But yeah, we had a lot of good things. I don't know if a lot of people know that Chad Gracie's a pretty good rock climber.
Oh, yeah?
Used to be. I haven't done it for years and years, but yeah, I was pretty into it in the late 80s, early 90s.
No solo free climbing, right? No, without a rope.
No.
Oh, my God.
Not like Alex Honnold. No, that guy is friggin' nuts.
Dude, that guy's nuts. But did you watch this thing? It's on Netflix now. It's called like something Summit, Rage of Summit or something. And it starts off with this Yuli Sek guy, and he's free climbing, breaking records and stuff like that. And then he dies like in 2016 because he went like a little too nutty. And Alex Honnold is on it just saying like what a great freaking guy he was. And I don't understand that, dude. Like, just use a rope, you know, like what's the problem with, you know, you're breaking records, but also you go too far, you're going to die. That's it.
Yeah. I would never even contemplate that, but yeah, I only really did top roping, which is, you know, you have a 180 foot long rope and you can basically climb 90 feet max. So we would do that kind of stuff. And then there's lead climbing, which is where you use a rope and you put in protection as you go up, and you can go up 180 feet, and then your belayer follows you up, takes all the stuff out, and you continue a pitch. So yeah, that's how you can do multi pitches.
Right.
But like, I never got into that. That was too high for me. I was good with not about 90 feet.
Dude, if you have 1 second of holy fuck, I am up really high right now. Like I've gotten that just like being on roofs and stuff. So if you get that up there, like Jesus Christmas, that's like end all of.
Oh yeah. If you're in a multi-pitch climb and you freak out, yeah, you're pretty fucked. You can't get.
I mean, you got to have balls of steel. Yeah.
There's a place I used to climb the most was called Chickie's Rock over here by the Susquehanna River in Lancaster side. And one day I was over there with my buddy, Eric Miller. I don't know, Joe, if you were there or not, but there were people climbing. Some guy set up, we had our route set up when we were doing it and climbing. These guys set up beside us, and one guy started going up the rock, and the other guy who was his belayer was just not even watching him and like not even holding on to him. And we're just like, hey, you might want to stop where you are, because we had to tell this guy how to belay this guy.
Wow.
Because he was basically not even attached. So if the guy fell, he would have been fucking, you know, he would have died or been really hurt.
Holy shit.
But it was a while to watch these guys set up, and then the guy starts climbing and the other dude has no idea what he's doing. I'm like, you just left your life in this guy's hands and
that's didn't crazy.
What to do, or had any idea that he knew what didn't know what to do.
So probably neither of them really knew what to do. Otherwise, the guy climbing would be like, yo, you wanna start doing your job?
Well, the guy climbing set up the rig and like seemed to tie the knots and be all ready to go, but whatever. It was strange.
My goodness. Yeah. I mean, when you're doing something like that, you gotta really know who your partner is, even more than a sexual partner, I think, because
100%.
Yeah. At least you got some protection when you're don't know your sexual partner. But there, my God, one false move and that could be it.
Yeah.
That dude Yuli fell 1,000 meters. I don't know what meters are compared to feet or inches.
It's about 3,000 feet. It's enough.
Holy shit. 3,000 feet.
Roughly. It's about 3-1, basically.
I remember the first time, probably the first times because I got out of it, man. It was too much anxiety for me. But I remember one of the first times we went up to Chickie's. I think it was me, you, and Butch. And we just free climbed up, not knowing anything.
Yeah.
And psycho. Get up there to the top. And I obviously we probably took that one route there kind of off to the right there. I kind of remember. And I remember somebody up top being like, hey, you guys are pretty good, man. How long you been climbing? We're like, one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't do that too much.
Yeah. Like I said, people don't know what they don't know, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
True. Where you at now, Joe? You in what part of the world?
I am I'm in York, Pennsylvania.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, currently in my office. Run a little business here doing street cleaning, paving sweeping, construction sweeping.
I see blueprints behind you.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, it's all good. I mean, it's part of the office.
Yeah.
Are you building some, or are those just for like your street routes and all that goodness?
Typically that was probably parking lot layout. And they're actually a little bit older. Some previous jobs that we have done just held up the plans in case we ever have to come back, you know.
So you've known these gentlemen since Public Affection days, even before Live.
Well, around 87, 88 when we met.
Yeah, it was a grand there. I remember, if you remember Amy Hopwood, she got me there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Public Affection back then was this mystical band that, you know, played the temple, you know, the temple dance, and I'd heard of them and ended up getting a job there working, probably doing dishes, I think was my first job. And at that time it was just you and Ed working there.
Right. I would work the front. I would cook and.
I was doing the dishes and we all kind of hit it off. And I remember I had to take my car down to Volkswagen and you offered to give me a ride and Chad and I hit it off really well, kind of outside of work.
That's when you had the Fox, right?
Then I had the Fox after that. Yeah.
Volkswagen Fox.
Volkswagen Fox.
I never even heard of that. I've heard of a rabbit, I think, but not a Fox.
Yeah, it was like a four-door, not hatchback. It was like a four-door kind of sedan. It was a four-door or two-door?
Yeah, four-door. I think it was more like an economy Jetta, you know?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Down.
Yeah.
And, we were all into the Volkswagens back in the day,
But then Joe, he moved into a house like right beside Grand Falloons, right beside the parking lot of Grand Falloons. So we'd go in the basement and open up the doors and fucking just load out cases of beer into his place and go there after and fucking just party.
Well, that's the move right there.
I want to say Taylor and Gracie were on that original rental application.
Were we?
Okay. I know Taylor definitely was. And I don't know if you were, but I know Matt was.
Oh, Matt. Okay,
when I say Gracie, I should clarify. Yeah.
So that was the party house.
It was funny, yeah, because we used to have, like back then, it was the guys in the band and kind of Matt Gracie, myself, like guys kind of our age, were in one circle. And then the little brothers, you know, like Scott, Pete, and all those guys were Adam, you know, were kind of in their own little circle. And we kind of crossed. And
Scott's my brother, and Pete is Matt Gracie's brother, and Adam is, of course, Ed's brother.
Yeah.
Just for clarity.
Yeah, sorry. But there came a time where we used to we get strippers in to pay the rent.
Yes.
That's right. Oh yeah, you'd have gambling nights and you do strippers.
Dude, how
would charge at the door?
Yeah, we would. And then the younger guys would be all like on the shoulders trying to look in the window.
I'm just imagining York strippers. They don't seem as hot as they should be. Am I wrong or am I right here?
I think that's pretty fair statement, you know, not all of them, but they were nice girls, you know.
Sure,
treated me well.
They worked at Harley Davidson and Caterpillar in a day and stripped for you at night.
That's right.
With Harley having third shift, a couple of these bars would have strippers at 7 a.m.
Oh wow. Yeah, I went to when I went out to visit the studio, I just looked for a spot at night to like just go in and drink. And it was this I think it was in New York because I don't think I really ventured much out of the town. But it's this old school bar where people are still smoking cigarettes in the bar. I'm like, where did I just fucking walk into 1974?
Oh, was that part of the White Rose Stooges? Is that where you went?
I really don't remember the name.
I think that's kind of the only smoking bar in New York.
Probably that. Probably.
Maybe Jackie B's, but I don't know. I probably didn't go there. Were you in downtown?
Yeah, it wasn't too far from the studio.
Okay, yeah, it was probably Stooges and it's part of White Rose.
Yeah. I was like, this is crazy. I felt like I walked back into like the 80s and 90s. But it was cool. It was like, this is how bars should be, you know, like go in there, get cancer, and go about your day.
Yeah. Leave the bar stinking.
Yeah. Oh,
cigarette smoke.
God. Even when I smoked, I didn't like walking into a smoky filled room. You know, like I was like a clean smoker. I wouldn't smoke in my car or my house. It was outside. I would wash my hands. I was kind of a gay smoker, so to speak.
I remember my parents used to have, like when I was, my brother and I were, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12, they would have party nights with like poker, and like all their couple friends would come over. Everybody smoked, and the whole fucking house would just be like this haze of smoke. You could barely see through it. It was like, Jesus Christ, it's nuts.
My grandparents, you know, because all their kids smoked, and they had like 6 to 8 kids. I don't even remember how many, but they would all go to the house, and then, you know, they would paint the walls every couple of years, and you would see the nicotine dripping from the top of the walls. And I'm like, as a kid, I'm like, this can't be good. And this is before like Surgeon General warnings. Like, I had enough like wherewithal to be like, I don't know about this.
Doesn't seem well.
It doesn't seem cool. But those were the days, right? When no car seats, no seat belts, people are smoking, drinking, and driving. Like, what happened? We became communists. We're no longer American now.
Well, even going back to the band, I mean, could you imagine just letting your 18-year-old kid jump in a rental van and drive to freaking CBGBs?
Right.
You know, I mean,
yeah, nowadays, yeah. Hell no.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. You look at, like, I see an 18-year-old now. I'm like, that's a little kid. But when I was 18, I felt like a full-fledged adult, you know? But it's like, it's a weird perspective.
I think in a lot of ways they are kids now, just kids.
Yeah, they're not maturing like we did for some reason. It's probably because we've come so lax as a society where we're not allowing people to smoke indoors. We're not allowing the old drinking and driving. Like, we've just become, I was watching something the other day when they were like doing the smoking law, and these people were like, we're becoming communists, you know? Like,
I saw that video too. It's hilarious. Yeah.
Dude, that's hysterical, man. Yeah. Like, I kind of get what they're saying, but like, I also understand, like, from an employee's point of view, like, you don't want to go to work and have to breathe this shit in. But in a way, it is like, yeah, there's a freedom taken away from you.
And then, like, for us, like, with my business, I mean, it's even a law, you know, and I'm sure Chad knows through his different, you know, real estate ventures and stuff, like, you can't, it's a Clean Air Act, you know, if OSHA comes in, so we try to have designated smoking areas, and I think a lot of it, too, with employers is health coverage, you know, if they have, you know, non-smokers or smoking not allowed, you know, maybe they'll get a break on you know, their health coverage for their employees, but.
That makes sense. I mean, we know how bad it is for people, for sure, right? I mean, it's just, you know, you make the decision to go into that establishment. So if some establishment said, hey, we have smoking, some say we don't, then those would be the deciding factors on where you're going to work, where you're going to go. It almost seems like it should be a choice rather than a law not to, you know?
Agreed. You know, I remember being over in Europe, like over in Ireland years ago, and of course, no smoking in any of the pubs there, you know, that'll never fly in America. And it wasn't long after
that it happened.
Yeah.
Right. Happened. Yeah.
Yeah. I never thought that they would pass that because everybody and their mother was a smoker back in the day, even though they kind of knew what the writing on the wall was. I mean, anything you take into your lungs can't be beneficial unless it's, I don't know, like an asthma inhaler or something.
Did you guys ever see the, when they were passing laws about drinking and driving back in the 70s, the old footages where they're talking about drinking and driving and they're interviewing people and the guy's like, well, what's wrong if I want to drink a beer on the way after, on the way home after a hard day?
Yes. You know,
it's so foreign now. You know what I mean?
I remember my dad used to do that. I ride in pickup truck beside him, the passenger seat when I was too young, and he had a beer between his legs, just driving, smoking, drinking.
It was normal. And then I think it was MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, that just went nuts with it. And I completely get it. You know, you are not 100% when you are drunk driving. But I'm going to be completely honest. If I'm blowing 0.08, I am I'm very good to drive. I'm not even buzzed in the slightest. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think they went a little too low with their threshold, in my eyes, because 0.08 to me is like 2 beers, and I'm not drunk or, you know, going crazy on 2 beers. I could drive perfectly normal.
So with my business, my sweeper trucks, they're class B CDL, like 90% of them are. So if you have your CDL, which is commercial driver's license, your limit is 0.04.
Wow. Now,
I understand if you're driving your work vehicle or whatever, but that 0.04 carries into your personal life. So realistically, like you said, you could stop, you know, on the way home, have dinner with your wife or whatever, have one glass of wine and potentially be over.
Screwed. Yeah. Yeah.
Which isn't real cool.
No, we don't want people bouncing off cars while they're driving home and barely able to see, but we also don't want somebody who stopped to have a glass of wine with their meal getting fucked for life and then all of a sudden losing their job and not being able to support their family all because you made it 0.04. My God, that's probably a half a glass of wine in all reality.
It could be. Yeah. And like I said, not advocating drinking and driving whatsoever.
No.
Right. But definitely not.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I do advocate drugging and driving, though. If you want to hit the crack pipe and go for a ride, by all means, ladies and gentlemen, do that.
Just don't ride through my neighborhood.
Yes. Stay away from mine, too. Yeah. There should be neighborhoods where it's allowed. Like, they should do a social experiment and see, like, you know, have like parts of New York where it's like, it's legal here. Let's see exactly how many accidents happen. It's illegal here. Let's see how many accidents happen and really weigh the weight of it all.
So you would want to do real-time human trials, huh? Is that what you're
doing? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The only way. Real-time human trials. Listen, I'm being serious now. If I want to smoke a joint and drive, I become the best driver in the world. I am following the speed limit. I'm focused on what I'm doing. I'm actually a better driver than if I'm sober and I'm fucking raging through the parkway trying to get to where I'm going. Then it's like it's an issue. But if I take a little toke off of something and go for a ride, I'm doing the speed limit. I'm using my blinkers. I'm a lot cooler of a driver than I am on a normal basis.
Well, the problem is they don't have a way to detect if you smoked 5 minutes ago or 5 days ago. True. That I know of.
True. Supposedly they're coming up with cheek swabs, but I don't know how accurate they are.
Well, yeah, we all know accurate those COVID swabs were. So
exactly.
There we go. Speaking of human trials.
Yeah. What a mass. I mean, it could have been a mass engineered fucking leak from a lab that, they were just experimenting. Let's see what happens if another pandemic hit the world. Because what was the one before? It was like 100 years before some kind of.
Oh, you're talking about Spanish flu?
Spanish flu. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which,
1912. I don't know. Google that. Put the fact check.
I think it was 17 or 8. Yeah, 1912. There you go. Okay. I thought it was during World War II. I mean, World War I.
I think it ended World War I, right?
That makes sense. Yeah. You're thinking of the War of 1812. Wasn't there a War of 1812 that for some reason sticks into my brain? That the name?
There was.
Yeah.
There was.
But I thought 1900s is all I know about.
That's when the Star Spangled Banner was written.
Oh, say. That's
Fort McHenry down in Baltimore.
Hey, God bless. That's a great song. Our national anthem, it is actually. Does anybody know any other country's national anthem? Every time I watch the Olympics, I'm like, that's their song. That's a weird song.
Yeah, I don't know.
Russia.
I knew I was going back to Ireland. We were there one time and they closed the doors at like 2 o'clock in the morning and called a lock in, and you could just stay there and drink as long as you want. But the bands that are typically playing in the local bars, at least in that town anyway, always ended their set at the end of the night with the Irish national anthem. I had no idea what it was. Everybody's
That's kind of cool.
Pretty neat.
Yeah. I mean, to have that much pride, I mean, that's cool to have that much pride for your country.
That's racist now.
It is. It is. Very true. Very true. Everything's racist now. I mean,
Everything's opposite.
Exactly. What's up is down. What's down is up. Like we were saying, the Democrats want war in Ukraine and the Republicans are the ones saying, well, wait a second here. How much are we spending on this war? It's obsessive to me. I mean, the fact that we were in Afghanistan for almost 20 years and spent $75 billion, and we're not even in Ukraine technically, and we spent at least $84 billion, is absurd to me in less than a year.
We're well over $100 billion in Ukraine for sure.
I'm trying to use like numbers that people won't be like, oh, he's inflating, because there's a lot of fucking morons out there that don't pay attention. So I'm just kind of using basic numbers here, but
I'm not worried about it. It's over $100 billion. So
over $100 billion in less than a year. My God, where do we get that money? But we don't have money for Hawaii. We don't have money for like the people starving in America. We don't have money to build a fucking wall. Like, but we have that much money to throw out to Ukraine.
Yep. Well, it's all laundered back through the military industrial complex, and they're all getting kickbacks. That's conspiracy theory, though. But just follow the money.
Follow the money, people.
So what's going on now? So Biden sold the leftover material from Trump's wall for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
And now Biden's saying that he's going to build another 20 miles or whatever of wall.
Yep.
So what's the net loss on that going to be for the taxpayers?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the net loss, like you said, in dollars, what is it? But what is the net loss in American lives and resources from all the people they just let over without fucking checking? I mean, what's the net loss there?
It's immeasurable, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone else think that was funny? I got an emergency test on my phone last week. Did you guys get that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They widely announced they were doing that. It was a massive test.
Right. No, I agree. But now all of a sudden we're at war again. Well, we're not, but there's a war going on, yet they didn't have any intelligence on that. I know it's a little bit conspiracy, but.
Well, I was saying that earlier, Joe, that, you know, the Mossad completely missed this fucking whole thing. Like that's their one number one job. And they missed this whole thing. The people paraglided in. They broke holes in the wall and en masse just came in after firing 5,000 rockets. Where the fuck did they all come from?
Right. And how did they not hear this chatter going on while they were planning it?
Yeah.
Right.
So that's I don't agree with what happened, and I'm standing with Israel, but like I just that's fishy to me that Mossad had no idea, and there's just a complete surprise. It just doesn't make sense.
Same. I stand with Israel, but just to look at what Palestine looks like today, like they are literally bombing it to the ground and then sending in ground troops right after. I mean,
oh yeah,
I get it. You know what I'm saying? After 9/11, I wanted to fuck the world up. You know what I'm saying? After we were attacked. So I could only imagine what Israel feels. But, you know, when you look at it from an outside point of view, it's like people are, you know, it's just crazy. The amount of loss and devastation going on, you know, over there. It's just, it sucks all the way around.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's going to be a little bit of a can of worms here. The Middle East is so complex. And I'd heard today on the radio there that they had found a bunch of babies killed, little babies ripped out of women's stomachs with the umbilical cord still attached. I mean,
some of them beheaded.
I don't know how, and I'm with Israel. I know that there's probably some type of point of view that Palestine has, not the terrorists or anything, but just with their country and stuff. I don't know enough to comment on it, but how do you tell Israel to lay down, you know, or to stand down with that? I mean, I can see why they're doing what they're doing. If what we're hearing is true, which I'm assuming.
Right. Well, again, I'm dumb, but I think what it really comes down to is that the Israelites are saying that, you know, like this land was theirs. And then for so long it wasn't. And then at some point, I think America actually gave them back that land and said, Israel is yours. So I think the Palestinians are like, well, that came out of nowhere because for hundreds of years it was ours, you know, and then you just set up this state and say it's theirs. I'm not 100% deep into what the fuck is going on outside of my own little realm, but just from bits and pieces of what I'm hearing, like just imagine New Jersey all of a sudden was given to somebody else and is no longer America's, but it's this other country inside of our country. We'd probably be a little perturbed and try to get that back sometime as well.
Mm-hmm. Chad, has the band ever played in any of those countries? Like,
hopefully not.
Like Dubai or something? I mean, like, no. You know what I mean? I didn't know, like, some of the American friendly countries, like Dubai.
No, never. Never went to the Middle East, anywhere over there.
To see what Dubai's done, like they were showing like pictures from like 20 years ago to now, like the massive amount of buildup that they've done. It's like a real tourist centric spot.
Well, they've heavily invested in that because, you know, oil's going to run out someday. So
sure.
They got to switch their economies, which Saudi Arabia is doing now, building the line and all their gigantic construction projects they're doing there.
What do you guys
see the end of oil?
What do you guys think about these cities that they're building where they're like 5 mile long buildings and like it's a city within a building? Have you heard of this?
You talking about the line?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's wild.
It's dope.
And they're actually, at first when they first announced, they were like, oh, never build this.
Right.
Their walkthrough.
Bill Hines walking through, yeah.
How's Bill doing these days?
He's good.
Good.
What up, Bill? Yeah.
How's George doing? I talked to George the other day.
Oh, did you call him? Yeah, he's good.
Yeah,
he's going to get out of rehab on Thursday and go live with his sister for a bit up in New York for about another, I think, 2 or 3 weeks. And then he's like, after that 2 or 3 weeks, he's good to go. He can function on his own.
Ready to rock and roll.
After that crazy episode.
Yeah. Heck yeah. So does anybody know the story about Senior Week? And
I don't know if I told a story about Senior Week. Oh, boy. That's I mean, I've told some people, but not on here. But yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
I'm talking about when the room got destroyed. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the only one. So our senior year, obviously, everyone around here would go to Ocean City, Maryland. Everyone from York, the York area, goes there for some reason. I don't know why. Just what you do. So yep. After everyone graduated, there was a week dubbed Senior Week in Ocean City, and you go down there and just fucking go crazy. And so we rented this place. It was the four of us in the band, a couple other guys. Joe, were you in that room too?
No, I was down kind of with you guys, but not in that room. I think I ended up taking you guys home though.
You probably did, yeah. But I think B. Marco was with us.
Oh, God rest.
Yeah. I think he was in there. And then
chat or live days?
Well, this is 89. So, I mean, yeah, we had the band. We were still Public Affection at that point when we graduated. So, yeah, we go down there. We rent this one. It's like a one-bedroom, like, you know, little condo thing. It's like we had like 5 or 6 guys in there, something like that. I forget what it was.
Yes.
And so we're partying the whole week. And one night, people got fucking rowdy. I wasn't there. I was somewhere trying to get laid probably. And then come back and like the fucking doors busted in, the walls are all fucking jacked up. The ceiling is fucking broken. Like all this crazy shit went down. We're like, what the fuck? And I think most of us that were actually renting the room weren't there when it happened, when all this shit happened.
Of course. Otherwise one of you would have been like, yo, chill the fuck out.
And so at first we were like, oh, this is fucking funny. Ha ha. So we'll just, you know, so it was kind of like almost like the last day. So that we pack up our shit and we just roll home. Right. But by the time we reached York, met at the door by our parents. I think we went to Chad's house first, my house, or Chad, and we're met at the door by all of our parents and they are fucking pissed off. I mean, we're like, hi. So like apparently the state police had an APB out for us and like we were almost arrested if we would have got pulled over.
Wow.
But so we get home, we're getting shit beat out of us by our parents, like basically, and the lady that owned the place wanted to charge us and, you know, take us to court and all this stuff. And so our parents ended up negotiating with her that my father was a carpenter and Matt Gracie's father. My uncle Tom was a carpenter as well. And so Chad Taylor's stepdad came with this. And we took Patrick's father actually came. So we took on Father's Day.
Oh God.
Of June of 89, we take all the dads down to frickin', and they're all pissed, dude. So we're driving down there and they're all fucking pissed in the car. It's four hours, you know? And so when we get there and we get to the place and we're like, they've negotiated that they're going to rehab the place, make it good as new, better than it was before. They put up, fix the drywall on the doors and all the shit. So we get down there and we ended up having to pay for it out of, you know, band money or whatever we were using at that time. And So we get there and the dads are all pissed. Like I said, and we open the door and the dads walk in and they're looking around and they just start busting up laughing. All of them are just like laughing, looking around like, this is fucking crazy.
Been there, done that.
And so we start laughing. So it ended up being a fucking great Father's Day where we all worked on this room, got it put back together, and they were fucking joking with us. But, you know, of course, in front of the moms, they had to be pissed.
Right.
But it was cool. I mean, it was hilarious when they walked in and started laughing their asses off. We're just like, what? We're all looking at each other like, why are they laughing? Oh my God. They're like, yeah, we did something like this when we were your age.
Right. Your dad's realized, hey, they're just boys having blown off some steam. It's like they were, you know, killing people.
Mm-hmm. Haven't even recorded their first album yet. They're trashing hotel rooms.
That's right.
Let's go.
We had some cassettes of, I think, no, we did record
Death of a Dictionary.
Was that out by then? I don't remember.
Well, I don't know if we put it out yet, but we had recordings of it because we had recorded it before we graduated. So,
I still have mine somewhere.
Wow.
Well, actually, I do know where it is. I used to have a bunch of t-shirts because I would help sell merch and sell tapes and that kind of stuff too. And
he was a man of many hats.
I was just there for the fun, but it was crazy to see.
For the ride is cool.
Yeah, you know, that was cool. We had a lot of fun back then. I mean, just because it was new to, obviously I wasn't in the band, I was just kind of a hang around guy, but it was a new experience for me, new experience for them, and it was just crazy. I mean, I remember being at CBGB's and Joey Ramone sitting there, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Joey Ramone came to see us, and I think Debbie Harry came to see us, Blondie. The guy who ended up signing us named Gary Kerfurst, and he was a legendary manager, and he had a joint venture record label with MCA Universal at the time. And so he signed us, but he managed the Ramones, the Talking Heads, Blondie, Jane's Addiction at one point. This guy was tied into the New York music scene.
Well, I heard that you guys were so tight in concert because technically you didn't see many concerts as kids. So like you thought like you had to be as good as like, you know, the album. So that's why you guys were so phenomenal in concert. Is there any truth to that?
It is true. We didn't see a lot of shows because, you know, we're in New York, so there's not a lot of people play here. But I don't know if that was because of that we just wanted to be the best band we could, though.
Yeah.
And we felt like, you know, playing what you play on the record was very important.
Sure.
That's how we went about it. And then we ended up naming ourselves Live. So we had to live up to that, too.
Dude, you look at Ed from back then, like the way he's walking across the stage, I feel like he took some moves from Hitler or something. He was like walking across like some crazy German or something.
Really?
Like, yeah, he was just like, he had like a lot of anger to him. It almost reminds me of like, no, I don't know what Hitler's saying whenever he's saying something, but he seems to have that march and that like angry tone in his voice. Because if you listen to like Live stuff from Mental Jewelry ever, like, he was really graspy voice. Like, it's not like the Ed of today, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think he would say he didn't really know how to sing at that point. That was just him faking it, you know.
Wow.
But as he got older, he figured out how to control his diaphragm and, you know. You know,
yeah, the difference.
Properly, but yeah.
Yeah, the just the vocal range from Mental Jewelry to Throwing Copper, you know, not that it sounds like different people, but there's just a lot more range there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Singing lessons and being able to use your diaphragm properly and support your voice.
Don't understand how people use the diaphragm. Like I sing, it's all throat. I have no idea where it's coming from. You know, I'm singing in the shower, so I'm not fronting a band. Yeah. So Joe, when did you stop being a hype man, or like when did they, you know, kind of outgrow Joe?
Throw me to the curb. No. I want to say it was the MTV tour.
That was our first big nationwide tour. Nationwide tour.
And it was tough because, you know, like at that time, I had an apartment. I was working construction, you know, and when these guys started playing and, you know, doing these little kind of mini tours and stuff, it was just, I couldn't do it.
You know?
But that was the one I kind of remember being like, damn, like.
Yeah, because that was with Johnny Rotten and Public Image Limited at that time was his band, and then BAD, Big Audio Dynamite, Mick Jones. And that was a crazy first tour to do as a band, like a first nationwide tour. It was like, and the opening was Blind Melon. So it was Blind Melon, us.
Wow.
And Blind Melon, Christopher Thorne is from Dover. So we had a connection there.
Nice.
And then, you know, of course you got to watch Johnny Lydon every night play, and then fucking Mick Jones from The Clash. It was like,
wow,
what the fuck is this? How do we end up on this thing? But the drummer who was playing with PIL, Big Audio Dynamite, I can't remember now. Oh, no, it was PIL. The drummer was playing with PIL was Mike Joyce from the Smiths. I was really a big Smiths fan, so we got to hang out with him. And but there were some, you know, crazy. He would try to lure us into rooms as young boys, and that was not cool. But anyway, it was cool to have tour.
Chad, who have you met that was like your biggest like aha moment? Like, oh my god, I'm in the room with so and so. Is there anybody that comes to mind?
Because
you've seen
guys from U2. I mean, I huge U2 fan. Yeah, but the only guy I have not met from U2 is of course Larry, the drummer.
Oh my god.
I mean, I've been in a room with Bono. I've met The Edge and Adam a couple times. In fact, went to see them in 92 or 93. They were doing, I forget which tour it was. But we had established ourselves, but so we bought tickets we got tickets, and then while we were sitting in our seats, the security guard came out and got us, hey, you know, they want to bring you backstage. Like, okay.
Yeah.
So we went back and
Adam, in that moment. Do you feel like you know, like we're not worthy, or you're like, yeah, I belong here?
Like, oh, absolutely. Yeah. I was like, they know who we are, and they've invited us backstage. That's fucking cool. So it ended up being Adam and The Edge, but you know, which is great. It was fucking cool to talk to them.
Hell yeah.
They were fans. And then what happened was, so later, like around 94, we were starting to, you know, Throwing Coppers are starting to pop, and we were doing headlines, starting to do headline stuff, and we were offered a headline theater tour. But at the same time, we were offered an opening slot for U2.
Oh my god.
So that was a hard choice.
Yeah.
But because we were more focused on our, you know, being a headline band ourselves.
Right.
We decided to do the theater tour.
Well, do you think like, because I feel like opening up for you too, like you're both of your music fits so well together. That could have been a big fan grab for you guys.
It would have been a good thing. Yes, absolutely. But we all made the decision that we wanted to do our headline theater tour. We thought that would be better for our career at that point. But though, cut to 2022, and now I have this friend Brian, who is a business partner with Jerry Harrison from the Talking Heads, who produced a bunch of our records, three of them. And they, it's great to see Stop Making Sense back in theaters, by the way, and the band sort of back together, at least all four of them in a room. That was cool to see,
for sure.
If they could get David to do a tour, that'd be freaking amazing. But anyway, so they were having, so Jerry and Brian were having dinner somehow with Larry Mullins.
Oh, wow.
And so Brian's like, hey, you know, I know the guys in Live, and I know that Chad Gracie is a big fan of yours. And he's like, oh yeah, I remember those guys. They wouldn't open for us. He's still fucking pissed about it. Damn it.
Yeah.
That's the one guy I want to meet.
Right.
He's still, because Larry runs that band, and he fucking would pick all the openers, and we were one of the very few bands that say no.
Wow, dude.
So he reminds us. I'm like, God,
what a fuck up.
Yeah, I know. Someday if I meet him, I'll have to apologize.
Yeah, for sure.
So sorry, Mr. Mullins. So sorry.
When was it that you guys did the Jane's Addiction tour, where you actually did like a full acoustic set before they came on? And I think you guys called it, you were the lube to the sex act.
Yeah, did we call it that?
Yeah,
that was in 2002 or 2003, somewhere in there.
That was killer, man.
We were asked to open for them, and we were like, yeah, we'll go do it. And so we get on, so we the first few shows we did full electric, but like they would cut the lights down to like a quarter, and they would cut the fucking sound in half, and like, so it's like we weren't translating, because, and I don't know if it was the band doing that or the production, you know, who knows,
something. Yeah,
So we were like, well, fuck this. We're going to go like full anti rock show now. And so we went out and bought like fucking, and it, I think it was Ed or Chad's idea, whatever. We went out and bought like antique furniture and like fucking coveralls. And we were like, okay, we're just going to do fucking acoustic now.
Dude, it was legendary.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it worked. It was like, it was like, you know, we'll anti, since we can't have full, you know, full PA and full lights, we'll just go fucking anti and do acoustic.
Makes sense. Yeah, it totally worked. I mean, I think this was, you know, not far or maybe a year or two after 9/11, but Ed wrapped himself in like American flag and was singing Overcome and shit. Like, it was just powerful.
Yeah, we did that at Madison Square Garden, or he did that at Madison Square Garden. That was like fucking huge.
Yeah, huge.
Went over very well.
Went over very well. I mean, and but what a way to kind of combat, because I mean, you guys are going to kill it just as much as Jane's Addiction. So yeah, you probably would have stole a lot of fans going full electric. So to do that switch like that was, you know, smart on both ends, because it was like, all right, so let me show you what we could do musically here, chill and acoustic, and then let these guys come out and like close the show, rock it out.
Yeah. I mean, they had, you know, obviously full production. They had dancers and like fucking strippers and shit. It was a great show. I mean, it was, and I'm a fan, so it was fucking cool to watch, but on the other hand, I'm like, why can't we have fucking full PA? Like, what are you scared of? Like, you're a fucking great band. You're not going to, we're not going to take anything away from you by having the same PA, or, you know, whatever.
You never know, dude. I mean, you guys in concert were just, there's not many people I've got. I don't think I've seen a band better than you guys when you guys are at your best, to be honest. And I've seen a lot of fucking bands in concert. I lived, you know, at concerts for like my 20s and 30s, but, you guys just
always took great pride in it. I mean, yeah, when we go on stage as a unit back in those days, it was like, we're going out there to fucking kill. Like, we're going to do this.
Rock on.
Taking no enemies.
Absolutely.
It's like Israel fucking just, you know, paving Gaza.
No enemies. Yeah, they're going fucking ham. So, Joe, anything else before we go? I usually cut the show around an hour-ish, a little longer.
Yeah, I've got two quick questions I'd like to ask Chad, if you don't mind.
Please.
I didn't even think about it till we're kind of reminiscing here. I wanted to know the Howard Stern birthday party show. I never knew, like, that one just popped up. Like, I didn't know you guys were doing it. You know, like I said, we hadn't spoken in a while, and I was like, holy shit. Like, was that fun? Like, I would imagine that would be debauchery, because that was back in Howard's heyday.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. That was, we had played the show. And then he loved Selling the Drama. It was one of his favorite songs. And so they asked us kind of last minute to do that. We just happened to be in or around New York. And so, yeah, I forget where it was, some venue, some theater somewhere in New York. And yeah, they asked us to do it. We came in. Yeah, they had all the brat, or what do they call them? The Whack Pack there, all those guys. Yeah. It was fucking hilarious, but it was cool as well.
For you guys to be there, like, I didn't know there was no like announcement Live's going to be there, and then when I saw it, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. Same. I was like,
it was very last minute. I remember that.
The and then the Saturday Night Live gig, man, I heard did you guys end up being on Saturday Night Live with Alanis or something? Was that the same time? Or I remember some connection between you guys and Alanis.
I don't remember being on the show with her. We did it twice, in 95 and 97.
Yeah. 97 was for Secret Samadhi.
Yeah. I don't know if we were making Secret Samadhi in New York, and so we went to Saturday Night Live just to go fucking check it out a couple of times. Once when Rodman was hosting.
There's some stories.
Hung out with him, and I think The Cure played, because I remember seeing Robert Smith and introducing myself, and he was just like, who the fuck are you?
Little did he know.
As you could imagine Robert Smith to be. I mean, you know, he seems very aloof, and he was, but that's fine.
As you should be as a rock star. Exactly.
Being Robert Smith, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Rodman stories are good.
Those were crazy. Rodman coming out on stage with you guys. I'm like, what the fuck is this band? Like, what are they doing with Rodman? They seem so wholesome, and they got this crazy ass dude coming up singing I Alone with them.
In 96, we were, I don't know if we were playing in New York or we were maybe recording, but like somehow there was a connection. He wanted us to come hang out in his hotel room. He was a fan. I don't know. We went to hang out in his hotel room, and he was having breakfast. Crazy.
you know, he's got crazy hotel rooms, I'm sure.
Yeah, and there was somebody in the, it was a suite, somebody in the bedroom. I don't know who was in there. Some chick.
Madonna, maybe. Yeah.
It could have been Madonna. Who fucking knows? But we had breakfast with him in his room. That's the first time we met him. And then he was just come to a show. Like, who's not going to let Robin into a show? He would just show up, come onto the stage, fucking jump around.
You guys, he would sing with you guys and jump around. It was like, I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah, it was funny. And you know, you couldn't say no. I mean, he was just gonna fucking come up there anyway. So I was like, okay, yeah.
Right. Security.
Right.
But yeah, man, you guys, we definitely gotta dive more into your SNL and your Howard Stern appearances on this show, because there's just they're cool stories there. Like, what made you guys, I love the song, but Hero Psycho Dreamer is such a fast, like, three, like maybe 2.5 minute song. Like, why would you pick that as one of your songs? Like,
on SNL the second time. Yeah, we played Lakini's Juice, and then I don't know how we decided to pick that song to do. I don't know.
It was awesome. It was awesome.
Rock out, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Show people you guys rocking out, because that's a nice, fast rocking song. Alrighty then. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for checking us out. Week 5. We have guests coming on every week, apparently. Joe, I want to thank you for coming on. You definitely gave some cool ass stories from the early days.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Joe. Yeah, good to see you, bud.
Yeah, thank you, man. And love to do it again sometime. We'll come up with some more good ones for him.
Absolutely, dude. You have an open invitation for sure. And the Gracious Two, putting the shit in bullshit. Chad, anything you want to let the audience know?
No, just again, thank you for joining, and we'll see you next week.
I want to leave the audience with this. I don't know which side of the coin you guys are on, but please, please do some of your research and don't just listen to NBC, CNN, Fox. Do some independent research. Get some knowledge going, because the world is a crazy place right now, and we have powers to vote these people in and out. So kind of pay attention to what's going on, people. That's my PSA for the day.
100%. Later, people.
Later.